weather with Liberty Insurance. Ready to get a quote on your car insurance? Find out more at libertyinsurance.ie.
Outbreaks of light rain and drizzle tonight. Lowest temperatures of 5 degrees.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green. It's Monday the 15th of March. One sleep to Tottenham.
Coming up tonight on Game On, Rory Best looks back on Ireland's tight victory over Scotland.
It's the same old story sometimes with us. We're just letting in soft tries. Tries that, you know, just isn't acceptable at an international level. And it's frustrating because I felt we dominated large parts of that game. And 14 points up and suddenly we're drawn with a few minutes to go. But great character to sort of stay in the moment and bounce back. And they're the things that we've been working on.
And I'm live in the Cotswolds to give you all the latest news ahead of day one of the Cheltenham Festival.
Honeysuckle has the advantage. She leads. She's two lengths ahead. Benny Dejure in second. Honeysuckle, a massive leap from the last, but a great leap from Benny Dejure as well. Honeysuckle is in front, the far side. Nearest to us is Benny Dejure, who is inching closer, running towards the line. Honeysuckle is in front. She's trying to fend off the challenge, and she's done it. Honeysuckle remains unbeaten.
That commentator sounds like he is in the Cotswolds as well. Roisin Upton joins us to talk about Ireland's fantastic win over Great Britain.
Gillian Pinder now has the opportunity to send the Green Army wild. Can she find a way past the Spanish keeper Ruiz in these 8 seconds? Pinder scored with her first shuttle. Pinder scores with her second! And Ireland are in the Hockey World Cup final!
Oh, happy days. And will Stephen Kelly admit that Arsenal are the best team in North London?
This could be pivotal. Lacazette scores comfortably, sending Lloris the wrong way. Calmness personified from the Frenchman.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game on 2FM.
Game on 2FM.
So, guys, I suppose for sporting highlights, there probably are the hockey and the rugby, and seeing as we have a lot of guests coming on to talk about them, we can't really dwell on those. But, Dunica, I'd say the first half of the England-French game was pretty spectacular.
Honestly, Ruby, I stood up at half-time and applauded it. It was just, it was fantastic to watch, just as a rugby fan. And
by yourself, like?
Yeah, it was. Well, I had Jake on my laps, and he was a little bit put out by this, but I was there. That was a half of rugby. It was just incredible. It kind of fell away in the second half, but it was just great to see. What I liked about England and France, they attacked. They used the whole pitch. It was just reckless at times, and the physicality was as high as we always thought, but the skill level was great. So yeah, it was brilliant to see, and it was really enjoyable weekend of it. We'll be chatting to Rory Best, so I don't want to go on too much about it, but yeah, it was good to you surely enjoyed it, Ruby. I know you've
I just kind of thought France maybe should have won.
Are you on about the grounding of the ball, or are you on about just with the amount of possession?
I know, and it fell back on Joy. It was Joy Neville, wasn't it?
Yeah,
the TMO.
100%
it fell back on Joy. Yeah, and she made the call. But I just even thought Dunica throughout the game. I just thought France were the better team, and I thought they should have won.
That's what I kind of liked about England, though, that they stayed in it. They weren't playing as well as they could, and they just probably found a way to get it done. And it was probably certainly a bit of a lift for me. I definitely enjoyed it. Marie, about yourself?
We'll get on to Rory Best very, very shortly, but I quickly just want to give a nod to Sligo Rovers Football Club, because today they announced they are going to give a little tiny Sligo Rovers jersey to every single baby born in Sligo. And
I think it's
absolutely fantastic. There was a report out today in the Irish Times as well. It details some of their fundraising activity during the pandemic. They managed to raise 400,000 from their supporters. And when the pandemic hit and all the matches were cancelled, not one of the people who have who sign up for tickets asked for a refund. Everybody stayed with them. And now they're kind of giving back a bit to the town and the community, and they're giving all the babies jerseys. I think it's a lovely story, and it was my highlight of the weekend.
What a loyal fan base, but what a brilliant thing to do. Like, you can imagine it if you're your little baby girl or boy, they're getting their first shirt as they leave. Because normally you get a few of those, is it Aptamils or different kind of nappies? So you get a little starter pack to get you going. Imagine getting a good jersey.
It is cool.
A lot of going down the beach, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning as well. When you're out of Aptimel and no nappy. Say, yeah, but we have a jersey.
Absolutely, absolutely. Will we kick on, guys?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, we're delighted to be joined by an Ulster legend, a former Irish skipper and a British and Irish Lion. Rory Best, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
Rory, in your 124 caps for Ireland, have you ever seen footwork like Tadhg Furlong's on Saturday?
No, it's very impressive, wasn't it?
Rory, we're going to actually ring you back if you don't mind, because the line is very bad, so we'll get back to you very, very shortly. And Donica, you can tell us about Tadhg Furlong's footwork if you want.
Well, we were probably chatting about it there earlier on in the day. It was just, for me, it was incredible. I know everyone talks about Tadhg Furlong and what he brings at set piece and scrum, but just X factor, Marie, just to be able to, he was like Michael Flatley with maybe in 120 kgs.
You've seen an awful lot of rugby players up close and personal now throughout your career. Have you ever seen anyone like him?
I think physique-wise, there would be an awful lot of people like him, but it's his ball skills that make him different. I think that's the brilliant thing about him.
Okay, well, Rory should be back now. Rory?
Hello, is that any better?
We have you now. Donica was just waxing lyrical about Tadhg Furlong's footwork and his ball skills, and we're just discussing whether there are many players out there like him.
It's incredible, wasn't it? I think the first step to see the Scottish hooker slipping over was brilliant. I think Finn Russell was very glad to get out of the way, I think, of the second one. But it was actually impressive. The nice soft hands to give the pass after all that was, even though they made a P-through one, it wasn't quite a soft hand straight after it, but it was really good. And that's what, you know, a fit and informed Tadhg Furlong can get. It's great to see him getting back to somewhere near that form of sort of 2018-19 before he got the injury and the layoff.
Rory, we'll get on to the performance and things like that again in a minute, but the camera kept flicking to Warren Gatlin sitting in the stand, and for me watching it, the one person who may have got himself a ticket on the Lions was actually Paul O'Connell, because Ireland's defensive line-out was incredible.
It was absolutely incredible, and I think also the breakdown, you know, the two things that Paulie was brought in to do, they worked really, really well, both sides of the breakdown and that defensive line-out. I think it's really beneficial to have Ian Henderson, James Ryan and Tadhg Byrne in there. They're three smart players. They move really well. They read what's going on, but you've got to get them all on the same page, and that's what Paulie's doing. And Donners knows better than anyone that you don't want to get the stir if you get things wrong, and they're obviously buying into that and loving it. And you can see how enthusiastic they get to defend line-outs.
Donica, you've obviously been in there with him. When you're looking at that line out, what are you seeing that he's bringing to it? What's the Paul O'Connell mark there?
Yeah, so for me, Marie, what he's doing is he's simplifying it, and he's giving everyone really simple cues. So when I was on the defensive line with him, he'd say, you lift when this happens and you jump when this happens. So it would be small things like, if you see the loose heads, the back of his head, you're going up, Dunners. Whereas if you see him, you know, facing you, that means you're lifting. So I think he's breaking that down. But I agree with Rory as well. I do feel guys like Ian Henderson are covering an awful lot more space. What annoyed me about even our attacking line was I felt we were lethargical in how we moved on the ground, and I think we're way better at it now. And I think Paulie, there's small little things, but it's little bits of detail, and just being able to explain it really well is important.
So Rory, Dunica's on about simple things there. So when Ireland were 8-3 in front and had a very kickable penalty pretty early in the game, you used to be the leader. Why did they go to the corner and risk getting nothing when it could have been 11-3 and just keep that scoreboard ticking? Simple things.
Yeah, I think it's difficult because you have to trust the feel for the game. And I think there is definitely a school of thought that would always be try to get more than 7 ahead. Once you get to those 8 points on a team, especially with a team like Ireland, you know, that are usually so hard to break down, 8 points can seem like a lot more for an opposition. But at the same time, you know, Johnny Sexton's very experienced. He'll have been talking to James Ryan and Hendy there, and they'll have felt that 7 points there would have really killed the game off. As it was, it let them off a bit, and Scotland got that fairly poxy try to draw a level again, and that's the bounce of a ball, and they're the sort of the reads that you have to that you have to make, and you have to trust your leaders in that.
Paul, sorry, Rory, we made a brilliant start, and it was the physicality that jumped out for me. The first 15 minutes, you know, up front, we dominated the game. But we heard Johnny at the opening clip there saying, you know, to leave a 14-point game slip away from him must be really frustrating. What was your overall take from the game?
Yeah, I agree with you, Donners. I thought the start, I actually was watching it thinking, you know, Ireland are going to dominate here. I stayed seated. I didn't get up and applaud like you did. But, you know, they looked like they were just going to steamroller them. And it was almost like that kind of lucky try Scotland got. Sort of, they went back into their shells a little bit and they allowed Scotland to live with them in that second part of that second half. But there's no doubt that they went there knowing that they have to physically front up and physically beat Scotland if you're going to win the match. And they did that, and they'll be disappointed because I think there was on 60 minutes that Scotland scored the first of their comeback tries, and that was 14 points ahead with 20 minutes to go. You don't really expect Ireland to concede that those two tries. That first one, huge score by Hugh Jones, was very soft, and the second one, I think they'll have a look at that and how they got there, first of all, how they ended up on the line. But secondly, you know, that second hit going in on Hamish Watson, he really shouldn't have been allowed to spin back towards the ruck. And he did phenomenally well to get the ball down, but I think someone inside that should really have mopped him up before that. And they'll be disappointed with that. The fact that they stopped playing a little bit as well with 20 to go.
Rory, Johnny Sexton regularly refers to international rugby and the level that it's at. And Dunica as well, we've spoken about it quite often, how often how you can be exposed at that level. And we just look at James Lowe, and I guess he is coming under a lot of criticism over the last 24 hours over his defence being an issue. Do you think that he can fix what he needs to fix at the level he's playing at?
Yeah, look, I think he at the end of the day, he's a smart rugby player. He's a good rugby player. So, like, he'll fix those and, you know, he'll be better for it, and Ireland will potentially be better for it. I think the big question is whether, you know, is he one of your starting wingers anyway, even before that game? I think it was a shame to see someone like Jordan Larmour on the bench. Obviously, Jacob Stockdale just coming back from that injury. And I think what Ireland need is they need the like of, if you're going to play Keith Earls in one wing, who does so much for the team in terms of his work rate, the way he talks, the way he leads the defence, the way he leads kick chases, I think you nearly need somebody else in the other wing that can create things out of nothing. And Jordan and Jacob have that ability. And, you know, for me, that's probably the big thing, is I would love to see one of those two starting. And but James Lowe, there's no doubt he's going to get better for it, and he is going to be a better player, but is he the best player for Ireland right now in that position? I'm not sure.
A lot has been made about looking for a replacement for Johnny Sexton at the moment, but people forget that we needed one for at full back as well. And Hugo Keenan, for me at the weekend, looked like he cemented that jersey as his, and is a replacement going forward.
Yeah, totally. And I think he's been impressive for Ireland in that back three, whether it was wing before this or fullback now. He's been really good, and he looks composed. He covers the ground well. He makes smart decisions. And, you know, with Jacob getting that injury, it put to bed a little bit which one's going to play fullback and which going to play wing, because Hugo's come in there and, yeah, for me, is the starting Irish fullback, and everyone else sort of fits in around him. And sometimes you need that little bit of a small bit of breathing space to go, right, you're nearly at the start of it. He was the only man for fullback because there wasn't any other options. And that gives you a little bit of confidence that you get into play, you get to find your feet, and then you can really kick on. And he's done that, and that's what you want to see.
Yeah, it was a coming-of-age game for Hugo Keenan, really was. I thought it was impressive as well, Rory. And everyone talks about the change now from moving from the kind of structure of Joe Schmidt to heads up. Did you see enough of that this weekend? For me, I thought we used the pitch an awful lot better. Beforehand, we were playing inside 15s where there was more width to our play, and I found it exciting to watch.
Totally, they definitely did. I think there's no doubt as the game went on and the game got a little bit tighter, I felt that Ireland probably got a bit nervous and played maybe a little bit more within themselves in that final quarter. But yeah, there's no doubt they're certainly playing a lot better. I would say their tactics as well was to take Scotland on physically. They wanted to use the width of the pitch, but they also wanted to use the middle of the pitch and really take them on. And you could see that too, because you don't want to get too, as Eddie O'Sullivan would say, too helter-skelter against Scotland, because that suits them down to the ground. Finn Russell, Stuart Hogg, Julian van der Merwe, you know, that falls into their hands because they're big, dangerous, broken field runners. I thought Ireland managed everything except that kind of 15 minutes from 60 minutes to 75. I thought they managed everything else really well. And I do like what I'm seeing with them, and it's going to be a major step up, there's no doubt, this weekend. But that was a really, really tricky fixture to go to Murrayfield and win, and to do it and to still have the composure and the confidence in themselves to win when they'd drawn when Scotland had drawn level.
Ruby mentioned Warren Gatland, and yeah, I'd certainly agree. Paul O'Connell would be someone that you'd look to, you know. But from the player's point of view, who do you think is a bit of a bolter there from the Irish side with their performance, or even the Scottish that was putting their hand up at the weekend?
I think the two sevens were really good. Will Connors and Hamish Watson were both two people that in a very, the back row was a really tough position. I think they showed different aspects of the game, but Will Connors, some of his hits in defence, and they're not these kind of big tackles around the chest that everyone goes, ooh, you know, they're ones that he just stops people dead, and he stops momentum, which is so important in modern day rugby. And Hamish Watson, is just his ability to be so powerful and aggressive and athletic, I think those two were definitely two. We touched on Hugo Keenan. I think the likes of Robbie Henshaw was fantastic. Tadhg Byrne and Tadhg Furlong, obviously, was, you know, these aren't necessarily bolters. Even Ian Henderson, you know, there's a lot talked about Maro Itoje and James Ryan will be fairly nailed on. And, you know, Johnny Gray's doing well. And I thought Ian Henderson showed on Saturday or Sunday that, you know, that he will could potentially offer more to the Lions than a Johnny Gray. So I think Ireland and Scotland were vying for a lot of the same positions. You know, you look at out half, even some of the centres, and I think Ireland overall came out better.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they'll need to bring it this weekend, another big game. Rory, thanks as always for joining us, and we'll catch up soon. Quick break, and we're grilling Ruby for tips on Cheltenham.
With Green Fern, a quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Ruby, as you mentioned, you are over in the Cotswolds for Cheltenham. What's it like over there? No crowds, not many people, I'd imagine.
Not many is an understatement, Marie. All of us here today was just any Irish people that are here, trainers, jockeys, stable staff. That was basically it, and whatever Cheltenham staff were putting the final touches to the place. But eerie, quiet, unatmospheric, so different, incredibly different.
What about the weather?
A lot of rain last night. It was 12 mils of rain overnight, which wasn't forecast. Simon Clay's the clerk of the course here. I thought they might get sort of 3 or 4 mils, but they got 12, and that changed the ground to good to soft, which we would call yielding in Ireland, soft in places. But it was quite wet this morning. It was a dry day, not overly warm, but bright, dry day with a strong wind. It will have dried it considerably, and Cheltenham is an incredibly well drained track. So it will have dried in the last 12 hours, and it'll be drier again by 20 past one tomorrow afternoon, but it'll still ride on the slow side and suit plenty of the Irish horses.
Ruby, we've seen today Altair's out. It's the type of news you kind of get in around this time coming into it, but that's a bit of a blow, isn't it?
It is a blow, and a blow for Nicky Henderson as well. You know, Altair missed the champion chase last year. This year he coughed after exercise this morning, which wouldn't be normal for race horses, and they scoped him, which means they had a look down his throat into his lungs to see what was there. And I don't know, I believe there was mucus there, which would be a bit like ourselves having a cold or a cough, only horses can't really tell you. So obviously they couldn't run him, so it's disappointing for him, and it's disappointing for the horse as well. He was a brilliant racehorse and a very good horse, but good horses to become great horses need to have longevity. And unfortunately for Altior now, he's missed the last two Cheltenham Festivals.
Okay, well, let's run through the big races tomorrow in case anybody didn't hear you last week or you've changed your mind on a few things. So it is day one tomorrow, and let's start with the Supreme Novices Hurdle. Is it appreciate for you, Robbie? Or Robbie.
Imagine you, Robbie Power on once. Like, I'm on twice a week with you for the last year and a half.
Robbie is in the
Robbie
spiky.
Power on one day. My God.
He was very nice.
What sort of an impression did he make on her? But anyway, appreciate it. Yeah, he probably is still the one for me, Marie. He'll be favoured. But look, I think with just the dead eight runners, that's each way the first three. I still think Blue Lord at 9 or 10 to 1 is still great each way value. He loved a bit of slower ground, and it's an incredibly small field. Four Irish horses, four English horses, but only eight runners in the Supreme is a record low number.
The Arkle
is all for Shishkin, and I think unfortunately you can't really back Shishkin tomorrow. He's too short, but I would say put him into a treble with Monkfish on Wednesday in the Brown Advisory Plate and Envoy Allen on Thursday in the Marsh Novices Chase. I think those three horses, all any one of them needs bad luck not to win.
Champion Hurdle, I know we're all talking about Honeysuckle. What do you reckon?
I think she'll do it. I think the shape of the race will suit her. As I said the other day, I think Gushen will go forward. So will Silver Streak, Aspire Tower, and Not So Sleepy. That'll be a really, really strong gallop. And on the slower ground, they can't go as quick as they would have went on good ground. So it'll enable Honeysuckle to get into a good rhythm. I was talking to Rachel Blackmore earlier today. She's very happy with her. So is Henry de Bromhead. I saw her on the track actually this morning. She looks really well. And I think she's a better mare now than she was this time last year. She's the one for me. And it's like anything, Marie. Yards are no different to houses. And if Altior had something this morning, it kind of puts a suspicion in your mind about Epitant. They're in the same yard. You just wonder. Now, it might mean nothing, but you would just be thinking that way, and would definitely have you cautious about Epitant's chances tomorrow.
Okay, so be a bit of doubt placed now in all our minds. The Mayor's Hurdle, Concertista. I know you're riding out every morning over there as well, Ruby. So what is the feeling?
Yeah, look, she looks well. I actually rode her work last week, or her last bit of work, and I thought she worked really well, but the realist in me, Marie, can't get away from the fact that Roxana has stronger form. Concertista has beaten Manila Melody twice this year in Ireland, once at Ferry House and once at Leopardstown, and that's not strong form. Roxana has stronger form. She was placed behind Paisley Park and Thyme Hill at Ascot just before Christmas in the Long Walk Hurdle. That's a much better race than the races Concertista has been running in. Roxana is 5-2, Concertista is 5-4. I don't know. Of course they're going to be shouting for Concertista, but Concertista is potential, whereas Roxana has already proved it.
Is there anything else that you fancy in day one?
I do, actually. I think St. Sam is a good chance in the 4:15, the Boodles Juvenile Handicap Hurdle, and I really fancy a horse called Next Destination in the last race. He was as big as 4-1 yesterday, Marie. He's now 5-2 for Paul Nichols. He's a horse that Willie Mullins used to train, actually. I rode him at a Cheltenham Festival in a Ballymore Novices Hurdle. He's a dual grade one win novice hurdler. We couldn't keep him sound on Willie's. Willie's round gallop didn't suit him, so his owner Malcolm Denmark sent him to Paul Nichols's, because Paul Nichols trains in a straight line up a hill. He's a very talented horse, and I think Paul has picked the right race for him, and I think the last race tomorrow will really suit Next Destination.
Ruby, you said you were chatting to Rachel Blackmore. For jockeys and trainers, how important is day one just to get off to a good start? Or does it feel like that you get momentum behind you from day one?
Oh, of course it does. It's like the first 20 minutes of a match, Donica. It's just no doubt about it. And you're looking at Paul and Rachel in particular, the two of those. Like, they have big rides tomorrow. Like, if Paul Townend Appreciate was to get turned over, Concertista was to get turned over, big rides start getting beaten. It does just ebb at your confidence, and the same for Rachel Blackmore. And all it takes is 1 minute to settle the nerves down. I suppose they're like out halves or strikers. Get a goal, kick a penalty, and everything becomes that bit easier.
Ruby, I know you have to go very, very shortly, but we've had a few texts in and they have the same theme going through them. Did you get your hair cut?
No, I did.
These are the questions the Dexter
wants
questions, to know.
These are the questions 51552.
Yeah, I get
have
my
to
haircut.
Tune into the telly tomorrow to find out.
Yes, I got a haircut.
Cut it yourself.
Not quite. Next best thing.
Gillian, Right, Ruby, enjoy day one. Yeah, we will chat to you tomorrow.
I'll be back every evening, Marie.
Brilliant. Looking forward to it. Yeah. Thanks so much. We'll take a quick break.
Cheers, guys.
With Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Now, just a reminder to anyone that listens to the show that Ruby will be with us every day during Cheltenham at 6:30, looking back on the action and also looking ahead to the next day and giving us all his expertise and his tips.
Absolutely. Keep the questions coming from 51552. I don't think he likes the one about the hair, so maybe that's a good one.
Maybe leave that one off. Donegan, we had Rory Best on a little while ago, and it was just interesting hearing him talking about James Lowe and whether he should start the next day. Rory was suggesting that maybe Jordan Larmour could be someone that would come in, or else Jacob Stockdale. And just from your point of view, because we have talked about how much of a loyal coach Andy Farrell is, do you think he's going to stick with him, and should he stick with him?
I think you can be loyal for maybe system errors and stuff like that, but these are one-up kind of tattles that he's missing. So it's an execution problem as opposed to a system, which I think that lies completely on the player. So you can be told once or twice to improve that. But, I think it'll be tough. What's great is that we've competition for places. The big thing, Marie, is trying. It's amazing. Everyone sees them as wingers and fullbacks, but they're actually a unit and they work together, and trying to get that balance right, it's really, really difficult. There's no doubting he's an X-factor player. If it was like special teams and you could bring him on for attack, but there's so many questions over his defence at the moment. I know if I was him, I'd love to get a chance to prove him wrong, but he needs to do it now. So if he's rewarded with another chance by Andy Farrell, he really does need to back it up with a brilliant performance, especially defensively, because that's where we're asking.
Well, it'll be an interesting team selection later in the week. Now, Roisin Upton's late penalty helped Ireland to beat Olympic champions Great Britain on Sunday and set up a series decider. Roisin joins us now on the line. Roisin, how is it taking penalties when you don't have a broken wrist?
Hi, guys. Nice to be chatting to you again. Yeah. My wrist is fully healed. Not a bother to me.
It was funny because the last time we spoke to you, you had the broken wrist and you'd taken the penalties, and you were not a bother on you then. But look, it's great to see you back and back to full fitness and doing what you do best. But it must have been a very satisfactory victory yesterday.
It was, of course. For me personally, I've never beat England, and you know, we've the most capped sports person in Ireland, Shirley McKay, with over 306 caps, I think she has, and she's never beat England, so nobody in our squad ever has, or GB for that matter, England or GB. So it was a stark day for Irish hockey, and I suppose we've come a long way since the World Cup, in a game that they completely dominated and beat us 1-0, and that's all we're trying to do over the past few years is, I suppose, bridge that gap and back up the World Cup silver medal. And we're delighted to have the opportunity to come out and play games during COVID, and I suppose validate some of the training that we've been doing.
Roisin, they're massive. When you hear of players that have played 306 times for our country and never gaining that success, but to beat the Olympic champions as well, it must be brilliant for the morale and the confidence of the squad.
Yeah, there's always a good buzz, you know yourself, Donegan, playing against the old rivals. We had a good celebration sing song afterwards, and it means a lot to a lot of different people, and we're very aware that, you know, we're how fortunate we are to be considered an elite and to be able to train away throughout this pandemic for the Olympics, and we don't take that for granted, and it's something that we talk about, and we wanted to put on a good performance, and it was brilliant that RTE were showing it, so the support over the last few days has been phenomenal.
You mentioned it there, just how far you've come since the World Cup final. And I think it just, when you see the games over the weekend on the players and on the telly as well, it just almost compounds that, just the progress that women's sport has made over the last couple of years, and ye been centre of it as well.
Yeah, we've come a long way, and, you know, I think the World Cup showed that people care and they want to see the journey. And I know people are even questioning to see if our game against England tomorrow at 3:00 will be on RTE. So it's brilliant that it's on the player and it's on BBC Northern Ireland, and that people will have access to it. But there's a real, you know, everybody love sports in Ireland. We've got a real backing for it, and especially in an Olympic year, and there isn't much happening, people are going to tune in. So there's a good buzz, and we're on the back of it, as you said, of a real, I suppose, 3 or 4 years with a real surge for women in sport, and I want for it to grow and it to be seen.
Roisin, you said that especially this week, everyone loves watching Ireland take on Great Britain. But what have you learned from the two games so far that you'd be implementing into your own game plans now to take forward into Olympic preparation?
Well, I suppose every time you get a chance to play in COVID, you know, it's an advantage to you when you go into a tournament. So we're adapting all the time to the circumstances that are around us. And in terms of actually playing Great Britain, like, we played Spain 5 times in January, and we hadn't played for a full 12 months prior to that. And GB have been playing in what's known as a World League, a Pro League, so they've had a lot more games than we had. So we have another game tomorrow, but after that, it's all very uncertain. We don't know when we'll be playing again, so we're just trying to build as a squad. We have 25 players up here in Belfast, trying to get everybody minutes. You know, selection is a huge focus point when only 16 people get to go to an Olympic Games. So I suppose it's really just focusing on ourselves and not so much on GB. Since the World Cup, we've really transitioned to a more attacking style. A lot of people, you know, we backed ourselves defensively in the World Cup. We're a much fitter team now. We can take it to the top nations, and it was nice being able to compete with GB for a full 70 minutes yesterday and not go up 2-1 and be scrambling for the last 7 minutes and just about get over the line. You know, we're in control. And we came back against, as you said, the Olympic champions. We're 1-0 down and we showed great, you know, I suppose, in conviction to actually turn that around at halftime and come back to 2-1. So we're learning a lot about ourselves, and we've got a lot of young girls coming through as well that are really stepping up, and selection's at the forefront of everyone's mind, just wanting to put our best foot forward.
Is that what Sean Dancer's bringing, you know, that more attacking style? We could see it over the couple of games, that intensity you're playing with, the speed, and of course the fitness.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we probably thought we were cheering hard before Sean Dancer came on the scene, but he's completely turned things around, and in many ways, I think we're probably a better squad now than we would have been had we gone to Tokyo last year. We've had more time to adapt to his style. He played for Australia under H himself, and down in Oceania, they have a very different style to in Europe, where we like to build up more and hold on to possession. You know, it's all about attack, go for it, counter attack. And he's filled the girls with confidence. You know, we train it consistently over and over again. Like, we've been training nonstop 3 to 4 times a week since September. So we're just buzzing to get out playing games and being able to implement it. And then it's so satisfying seeing that, yes, it's actually worked, these things that we've been working on.
And 16 places, 16 seats on the plane to the Olympics, it's so tough. What does that mean just for you guys as a group? Like, we're edging closer all the time. The hype is going to probably start building over the next few months or so. Is it difficult when you know that you're not all going to get there?
It's all part and parcel of a team sport. I think, you know, we've all been through it from an underage level. Off the field, we're great pals, and, you know, we all feel huge pride in being part of the Green Army and the bigger picture of wanting to take this squad to higher rankings. We're currently ranked 8th. We came from 16th at the World Cup down to 8th. So, you know, we keep wanting to push the bar for hockey in the country and competitively around the world. But selection is always a huge focal point. But it's a particularly busy summer. We have the European Championships in June, which are actually a World Cup qualifier. So we'll have to finish top 5 there to qualify for the World Cup the following summer. So it's busy, and, you know, we need the numbers. We have 25 up here, and everybody's going to play a pivotal role in that.
Just in terms of, we'll say, after the Europeans and Tokyo comes along, like, it's obviously going to be hot there. Are you doing anything to acclimatise?
Yeah, it's funny you ask. We started today. We're up in Belfast, and we've access to a heat chamber up here and to a sauna. So in the sauna, it's just passive heat training, and in the heat chamber, it's kind of like a little cabin, I suppose, with a couple of different bikes. So we're in there in our pods doing 45 to 50 minute bike session, and it's anything from 30 to 50 degrees between the chamber and the sauna. So you know, any extra degrees or I suppose percentages we can get in our performance to adapt and to be ready for the Olympics, the humidity is going to be a huge factor.
So we're
doing what we can, and yeah, it's great to have access.
Do you remember you went to Poland for some training camp?
Yes,
did you do anything like that?
We went for the complete opposite routine. We went to Poland for cryotherapy, minus 170 degrees. So it just shows how much it's moved on. Although I'd rather train in the cold than the heat. It is unbearable sometimes. The only thing I want to do in the heat is be on a sun lounger. But we wish you the very best of luck tomorrow, 3 o'clock, as you take on GB in Queen's University. And you're right, it's on the player. It'd be a brilliant one to watch with your family and get behind the girls. Keep it going, Roisin. We're so proud of you.
Thanks a million, guys. Mind yourselves. Take care.
Thanks,
Roisin. Game on 2FM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, Manchester City took another step towards the Premier League title with a 3-0 win at Fulham, while victories for Manchester United and Leicester strengthened their position in the top four. To talk us through all the football action from the weekend, we are joined by former Republic of Ireland footballer Stephen Kelly. Stephen, we may as well start with Fulham, because when they win, you're always mad to talk about them, but when they lose, yeah, I'm going to put you on the spot now.
Happy to talk about them as well.
Look,
It was
difficult one, yeah, for them. I think Manchester City are just in full flight now. They do look like champions in waiting, and it was another impressive performance.
It really was, and it was difficult for Fulham because it was an opportunity to actually climb out of the bottom three for the first time in a long time. But of all the opponents you're going to face, the Man City are probably the one you don't want to play against, because even though they had that blip against United and they lost a weekend ago, they just look like they're going to cruise to victory almost in every game. And it was the same against Fulham. They had countless chances. And then in the end, Fulham actually gifted them a couple of goals, which is just terrible defending, which they kind of got past there for a while. One, they kind of got it right off and not worry about it. They got to continue on for the rest of the season. And they've got bigger games coming up, in the sense of games they can actually get points in. But it was disappointing for them in the goals they gave away. But City were just excellent again.
We saw Pep playing a different system, two centre-forwards in Aguero and Jesus, and three centre-backs. Why do you think he was doing that for the Fulham game?
I think he likes to change things up just to keep players fresh, and there's an opportunity for him to get Aguero and Jesus into the game. And I think at times in games going forward, with the amount of competitions they're in, he's probably seeing what he can do to affect games, game management within situations. So if he needs to change it to the system to improve a performance, to get something out of the game, he's probably thinking, if I played him in this now, in this opportunity, then when it comes to a later stage in a not so more important game, but probably games that are more important, such as Champions League or Cup Finals, where I can just tinker and change, and they've already played that system, this will already be fresh in their mind. They've done this once before and they know how to do it, and it was in a real-time game. So I think it's quite clever from him.
Stephen, I know your heart's in it, but Fulham now, they're, you know, in the drop zone, 2 points off off Newcastle. Do you think they can survive, stay up?
I'm very optimistic, because I feel that the way they play and the performance levels of them has been excellent. But to be honest, the Newcastle draw on the Friday night was a big one for Newcastle, and that nicking that goal last minute was so important for them, and just to keep them ahead of Fulham, and then huge wins for Brighton and Burnley as well, just to kind of edge away from it, which I'm sure the Fulham faithful are going to difficult to take those two. But if they can take anything from the performance they put in, like beating Liverpool and beating Everton, they've got to think that when the last few games come up, they've got an opportunity to kind of just get run together, but it is going to be difficult.
You're looking at the other half of Manchester United and West Ham, and interesting enough, it was Mason Greenwood really who stood out for United.
Yeah, it was, and some great opportunities, missed chances for him, but another player who just, you feel, he just looks like very natural in his position. His movement off the ball is excellent, he's quick, he's strong, he does all the right thing. Not scoring is disappointing for him, but his all-round performance was very, very good, and just a player who Manchester United kind of are going to lean on going forward and in the future, because he's so young and he's got so much talent that he's a player, if they nurture correctly, he can be a big one for them.
It just shows as well they have quite good squad depth, although you'd have to think that Solskjaer will probably welcome the international break when it does come up, and then he can make that push again to cement second place.
Yeah, you know, I think second place at this stage with the rest of the teams dropping places, I think Chelsea have been on a really good one, and Leicester have been a good performance, but you would think at the moment now they're pretty much a shoo-in for second place with the way they're playing. And I think even when they drop points, they can bounce back and they can give a performance. They're not as consistent as we would like, and talks of a new contract for Solskjaer as well, which I think is a bit premature, but sure, you know, that's there to deal with things.
We mentioned Pep changing up the systems. Did you feel like West Ham have turned into everyone's favourite second team this year, but yeah. Did you think David Moyes was a bit cautious?
Yeah, I felt he probably was a little bit cautious. I don't think they've gone into games gung-ho in any such an imagination. In every way they played, they've always been set up with quite a solid base with Rice in the side and Suchek. They've been kind of midfielders who've got around. Suchek scored goals as well, but they've always had people covering their back four, and I think he's not going to go away from what has set them out in such good stead and got them into the position they're in now. It's been from a solid base, counter-attacking, scoring goals, and the players up front, just they didn't have it. They've already had a couple opportunities where they could have nicked a draw, Manu are clean all times, but I think Manu were worthy winners in the end, and West Ham were just coming against a side that had probably just too much quality in different areas in comparison to them.
If you look at Chelsea and Leeds, and we're talking about the importance of the defence, but when you look at the strikers and the lack of goals in Chelsea, he's only had 3 goals from his strikers, Tuchel, since he's taken over, which is, when you think of the spending spree and the money and all the talk about the players that was being bought by Chelsea before Tuchel took over, it's quite hard to believe, really.
Yeah, it is. You know, that's where the pressure is going to come from, Bernard. I know they're doing well, they're unbeaten, they're going well in the Champions League, but for me, the pressure is going to come from him for him to get those players for him, because, like I said, he's brought in because Lampard couldn't get the best out of what they invested in. So they spent a lot of money on attacking players, and Lampard couldn't get them firing. Tuchel's been brought in to get that. So that's where he's going to be pinpointed. Even if they're doing well and they're progressing up the table, obviously if they're going to win something, that's different altogether. But he's going to be judged on how we can get those players firing, because they always want to return on investment. At the moment, it's still not happening. They're performing, they look like a bit more organised and harder to break down, but they still need to get goals.
Do you think, though, that they're actually going to expect a return from an investment, or are they just going to go and buy a striker?
All the rumours are that Haaland is the one, and just whether or not he wants to go there. You know, he, for any team, he would change the fortunes of that side if he is to go to that team. Any team in the Premier League that can get him, they're contenders. Without anybody else, once he's on the pitch, they're contenders, just because he's phenomenal. If Chelsea can go and buy someone like that, then, you know, that's what they can do. That's what they have done in the past. But I still think they're looking to get something back from these players. They're not going to write them off so quickly after spending so much money on them.
Just on that, can you see something with Vernon that would be easily fixed? Or is it pure confidence, Stephen, which we know in sport, when it goes, it's really hard to get back?
Yeah, it is hard to get back. And like you said, you always hear strikers talking about they just want one to go in off their shin or deflection or something happened just to get the ball rolling again. And obviously different for me being a defender, I would never be in that position where I'm scoring so many goals. But I can understand that confidence when it drops. Then if you can't get it from your performance, it's down to how your manager can get it back into you. And I think that's where the manager is so important. If he is a striker and he can give him the belief that he's going to be a top striker for him, he's going to score goals, he's going to get game time, that's where it comes from. And I think, you know, it's hard to get back in. And I think with the way Werner plays and the pace he has, he's going to get opportunities, and he just needs one to drop.
Arsenal and Spurs was probably the game that most people were looking forward to this weekend, and it wasn't a bad one in fairness, but I suppose one big takeaway from it is when you think about how the fearsome front three that they have now, you just have to wonder why Spurs didn't just take the game to Arsenal.
Yeah, I know, obviously with Sun going off early, that probably didn't help with the dynamics and how they play, but you kind of feel, but then Lamella came on and did really well and his goal was just phenomenal. But you kind of just think with the way they play and with those guys, just go for it. You're putting teams on the back foot straight away, and they have done that. And we're being critical because of it was the North London Derby, and this is a game that is so close to the bone when it comes to Tottenham fans, myself included. But it's you just felt disappointed that they didn't go for it. They didn't really punish them and press and cause them problems, because with the talent they have on the pitch, any defence is going to be wary and frightened of that. And they just didn't take the game for them at all.
Can you explain that Lamela goal? Did he mean that? You know, that bit of skill, it was just incredible.
But he absolutely didn't mean it. He's actually done it before. Have you seen? He's done it before a couple of years ago in the Europa League. Actually, it was probably a better goal, which is crazy to think. But no, it's he has, and he's one of these. Lamela's one of these players who, every now and again, he pops up and he scores goals or he does something. He goes in the run. You think, God, this is the Lamela that they signed, that has been talked about, and you see glimpses of just this brilliance. But then he goes out of it. And he doesn't contribute enough consistently. But that goal was just a one off. It's definitely a contender for goal season. The accuracy and the power he got, it was just wonderful.
There was so much talk about Aubameyang being dropped for rumoured tardiness. Now, I did see pictures of what was reportedly his car stuck in traffic, so I'm not sure now if it was or not. But when you think about the call that Arteta made, obviously it could have went terribly wrong, and it didn't. But just his relationship with Aubameyang now, when you think of what that act will mean for him, do you think it'll cause it to fracture?
It could cause a fracture. You know, it depends on how the player takes it and what his attitude's like. Whether he seems the type of person that's going to respond and say, listen, I'm sorry, it was completely my fault. I totally understand that I was wrong. And he learns from it and moves on. I don't know how he's going to react to it. Whether he's going to be like, well, you know, I was late, but I didn't mean to be late. But I think it comes down to just professionalism. Like, this is a massive game. Not that any game is a massive. Every game in the Premier League is huge. For you to be late for a kick off for a game, it's he can't do it. He just can't do it. And I think he was right. Hindsight's brilliant, because obviously he looks like he got a spot on. If Arsenal lose that game, he's getting slaughtered for not having him playing, because he's their go-to guy and he's the club captain. But if you're laying that marker down with your club captain, that's a policy of, this doesn't fly with me and I don't care who it is. And you've got to respect that.
Yeah, absolutely. When you look then at Leicester, they, you know, 5-0 win over Sheffield United and change in management, do you think the players might have down-tooled?
Yeah, and even from the comments coming afterwards, how the players were, they took it very hard from the manager. And I can understand that. Like, for a lot of the Sheffield United players, they've come through the leagues with Will Wilder, and he has been one of the biggest advocates for these players' careers. He's helped them achieve and get to the pinnacle, and most of them have probably never played in the Premier League before. So, you know, that would be a big blow, but you still have to get out and do your job. And, you know, the reason they're in the position where they are is because they haven't performed well enough. I know the manager has to take some of the slack for that and take a lot and take most of it, but United have not been what they were last season, whether it's down to injuries, and they have had a few, but they've just, their performance level has not been the same, and they get found out a bit second season scenario, but they just haven't performed well enough. And for me, the players, they might be down on tools, but, you know, they're still at their club, they're still employed by that team, that they have to go and perform for them.
A lot of their social media rights did have tributes to Wilder, so you could tell what was on their mind. Let's move on to today, and Liverpool are looking to get their Premier League top four hopes back on track when they play Wolves a little bit later on. How do you think this one's going to go?
Yeah, again, it's a real tough game. I think Wolves are a team that just performs steadily most seasons. They've got to the level where they're capable of beating the top teams, and then sometimes they're capable of losing. But Liverpool, if they want to get back and have any chance of getting back into that top four, these are games they have to win. They have to win this game. They can't really afford to get a draw or a loss. They have to really go for it. A big win in the Champions League, again, important for them, but this is where it's going to count. They have to start moving up that table, and they need to start doing it quickly. So tonight is a huge one for them.
Stephen, do you think they will be delighted it's actually away from home, given their home form at the moment?
Yeah, it's amazing how that, and normally you're away from home, it's usually because of the fans. If you're having a bad run of form and you're home, there's more fans there to let you know you're having a bad run. So that you get away from home, it's almost a break to get away from them. And then the away supporters are generally will sing through anything. That's kind of the way it goes. Whereas that's not the case at the moment. And, you know, that psyche of it shouldn't be there. So when it's just something in them that they're lost at home and they can't get over, they went how many games before that unbeaten at home? So for it to change so quickly, that can't be something that's in their psyche. They have to just be able to get over that and get some wins.
Stephen, just before we finish up, there is a huge amount of talk about Roy Keane possibly going to Celtic. Do you think he would be the right fit for it?
Honestly, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. Roy's not been a manager for a while now, and it's been an assistant under O'Neill, I suppose, was a learning curve for him because he hadn't done that before. I know he did at Villa and the Lambert Grove for a short space of time. So coming into Ireland and taking a step back and not being in the forefront was probably good for him and his development as a manager. And I was at Birmingham actually when he got Sunderland promoted. I got promoted at the same time and he did really well with them. It's a tough, tough ask, but you're talking about character going in there, reigniting the fire in the team. Maybe it's the right job. Whether he's got the credentials and the actual management skills to deal with it, I'm not too sure. But, you know, I'm sure there's managers out there that have probably got better CVs than what Roy has at the moment for that job.
And do you think the fact that he's been out of the game for quite a while, like, is he out of it too long now?
He's not been coaching. He's not been day to day on the ground, on the field. I know he's been in the media and he's talking about football all the time, but that doesn't it doesn't give you the sharpness you need to be in a coaching environment, actually on the field, dealing with players, dealing with the background, everything that goes on with it. Listen, he's a huge name, absolutely phenomenal player. That doesn't always relate to being the best manager. And, you know, maybe it's an opportunity like this that will really propel him and, you know, everybody will be like, well, this is why he's very good. But, you know, he has been out of the game for a long time. And again, it was as an assistant the last time he was in it. It wasn't a full-on manager. So it's going to be very interesting. I'm sure he'd love to bring someone like Martin Whitten because they got on very well. And Martin's history at the club, that might be an option for them. But I'm not too sure whether Martin would be a number two.
I just can't see that happening. Stephen Kelly,
no, neither
thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, that's it from all of us. Thanks very much, Andrew O'Connor and Laura Lee. We're back tomorrow at 6:00.